Up until this point, we have been talking basically about the lands that are involved in the Old Testament. Starting next week, we probably will be getting people on the land, and it'll be in somewhat different land, because when they move from the Old Testament to the New Testament, about the main place that we're going to be looking is going to be the land of Canaan itself. In addition to that, though, we will be doing a lot of studying about places and people and congregations in the southern part of Asia Minor, eastern part of Greece, and Rome. And we will be studying some about some of the islands along the coast. Tonight, we want to kind of wrap up what we've been talking about in the Old Testament, the places and people that we've talked about. And we're going to begin to see some of the names that we talked about last week on maps now. And remember, in the thing that we're studying, the world has been populated by whom? Noah and his three sons and their offspring. So basically, we're talking about people who have come from basically the same identical background. And as we look at tonight's lesson, we're going to be talking about things like the Hittites and where they were found and who they came from. And we'll be talking about where their kingdom was, which people denied for so many years that it even existed. They said that that's just another case where the Bible is just presenting a bunch of myths. No such thing as Hittites ever on the earth. Then they found where their kingdom had been, and they found that it was a rather large community of these people. And as we went on, we found that at the time of Christ, I mean at the time of the children of Israel going into the land, we find the whole land populated basically by people who had come from other descendants of Noah. So that kind of gives us a starting place for tonight. And we're going to talk about some of those places and some of those people. On this chart, I want to point out several things. I don't like to put my back to you, but to stand up here and point them out, I have to. So pardon me for that. Now, as we look at this chart, we find the children of Israel basically are right along in this area right in here. Here's the Dead Sea. And remember when we started, I said each map is going to have something that will key it for you to identify. Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea with Jerusalem sitting about right there. As we look southward from that point, we see the Sinai Peninsula, and for a long time that has been Egypt's property. The line for the children of Israel basically is defined by a river that starts right along here, and the dry bed basically leads to his Yom Kippur, which is down here at the head of the Gulf of Aqaba. Now, two of the things that you want to remember as we go through our lesson tonight, Think about key points that you'll look for when you start looking at a map to find information. Egypt will always have this delta. It's right in here. It's a very fertile land, but it's just about sea level all the time. The extent of Egypt is about 50 miles either side of the Nile River. And the Nile River, as it makes up down in Southeast Africa, when it gets here, it's traveled, some of the water's traveled about 4,000 miles. Another marker on the Nile, it flows south to north. There's only about one river that does that in the United States, and that's the river, the Tennessee River. It goes east to west from somewhere a little bit below Knoxville until it reaches the Kentucky line going back up. But on this map, we have this as a key to look for. We have the two branches of the Red Sea to look for and the Red Sea down here. Up until some several centuries after the birth of Christ, people didn't even know that this was an access to the Red Sea. They had listed on most of their maps this as a standalone body of water. So a lot of the things that they figured out depended on this thing not even joining the Red Sea. Okay, now, to move on with this type of discussion, up in here, starting a little bit below Gaza and going north a ways to along about here, is what's called the Philistine place. That is the Gaza Strip in today's terminology. Gaza is one of the oldest cities in that part of the world, and it was a seaport. It's about 3 miles inland, but it was where most of the merchandise that changed hands changed right there in that city. So it gives you another feel for the activity that goes on in this part of the world. Now, as we move on across the Syrian Arabian desert here, if you notice, it's desert all across here. This basically is an extension of the Sahara Desert in Africa. Just a big old desert. A lot of up in here, it has a lava bed just about the whole way, and a lot of rocks and stuff like that. This part of that basically is almost totally impassable. They have built some cities along the trade routes, or maybe the cities were there and the trade routes developed. But the thing that we're looking at here basically tells us the route that people can take following from back over in here or following the King's Highway as it comes up this part of the world. Incidentally, I'm using a map that was designed to show Abraham's journey from Ur all the way up to Haran and then back down to Shechem, where it was his first stop when he got into the land of Israel. And we're going to study that in more detail in another lesson. But the point that I want us to all accept is all of this territory, all the way down through here, is basically the things that we see and read about in the Old Testament. Now, if we just keep in mind these configurations, up here is where Saul of Tarsus was raised or born, and he was raised at the foot of Gamaliel, down here near Jerusalem. And of course, we know what Paul went on to accomplish in his life. But that's where he started. Cyprus here has basically been in the hands of the Greeks a part of the time, and the Turks a part of the time. And today they basically agree. One of them stays on one end of the island and one stays on the other. But it's still Turks and Greeks on the island of Cyprus. Barnabas' home was along here on that island. And Barnabas is one that we study about in the New Testament, talking about his generosity and his love for the truth and the things that he went through with Paul of Tarsus, Saul of Tarsus. Now, we've talked about the Philistines, we've talked about the Hittites, but the Hittites, and I'm not going to be able to show them on this map, I've got to go to the next one. On this map, you see this river, the Halys River, it's up in what we refer to as Asia Minor. Here's where the Hittites basically built their kingdom. Right around in this area here. Another thing you will notice as we go through these maps, the people were always looking for security, an ability to grow food, or a source of food without maybe having to grow it, but having food available, and water. And without that, they were lost. And this feature, this type of requirements on the part of the people would determine a lot about how they built their houses. In Jerusalem, for example, Jerusalem itself is built on the tops of some mountains. And in the construction of those homes or that city, they would build walls around the city. Usually they started on the top of a hill if they had one handy. And in order to have water available, they would sometimes go in out like the spring Gihon on the eastern side of the city of Jerusalem. They have capped it over with rock, so it just doesn't even appear to be there. And the output from the spring is routed down. Part of it, most of it in fact, is routed under the city over to a pool which is inside the city, Pool of Siloam. And King Hezekiah, we'll study about him later, is the one that pushed this project so that he had the security of the walled city, and the walls would be based on the side of a hill, and the truth. People coming up trying to enter by going over the walls would find themselves faced with a vertical climb, sometimes 56, 75 feet high. Two walls. The outer wall sheer. The inner wall is just, I mean, it could be anything. It'd be up against a house or whatever happened to be handy. But they would fill the interval between the walls with rock and debris and stuff like that, so that basically it was a solid wall, maybe 25, 50 feet thick. But that was the city. And the people who were farmers would have their patches outside the city, and when a threat was recognized, they would come inside the city and leave the outside to the enemy if they wanted. But security and a good source of water, that was their requirements. Any questions or comments? I mean, they're doing a good job. You guys are not interested. Okay. Let me talk just a little bit more about the Philistines. The Philistines are believed to have come from Crete, this island right here. This is where Titus was left. And his job was to put in things in order in the church and ordain elders. Crete. And what Paul had to say about the Cretans were they were evil beasts, slow bellies. In other words, a people that they were mean and they were kind of slow. Now, I don't know whether he was talking about that mentally or physically or what, but that's basically the description he gave of these people. And then the other part would be coming from up in here, which is basically the Phoenician area. Took about right up in here. The Phoenicians or the Cretans are maybe a combination of those, is what seemed to populate Crete. And from there, they've been known as the people from the sea. They are about right along in here on the map of Palestine. Okay? Now, while I have this chart up, let me point out some other things on it. This is the top of the Persian Gulf. And you can see it's not smooth across here. However, back in history, these two rivers, the Euphrates and the Tigris, and a river coming out of these mountains over here, were all separate entry points on this top of the Persian Gulf. Over time, the mud and silt carried by these three rivers has filled in most of this up through here, and the rivers have joined in that area with mostly a silt deposit all the way across this facility. And now it's a single channel that goes out with its mouth at the Persian Gulf, and most of this has been silted up with a smooth top up here. Almost like it was poured there. And basically it was, with the silt coming down from these rivers and back up in here. Now there's one other people that I want to mention, one other thing I want to mention. The Ark landed on Mount Ararat. Now this map shows Ararat right back here, right in this area. There's some concern that maybe it's a different mountain, and they have an area about this size marked off, and there are about three places that have the typical two mountain setups. And one of them is here, and one of them is back up in this area, and one is back over here. So they really don't know which mountain it was, but they know the area it was in. Okay? Another thing that I want to show you here, on this map, if you notice, this is all colored, a lighter color than anywhere else, goes up into here. That's almost defining what's called the Fertile Crescent. It goes up something like this. I don't have an exact map of it. And it comes down basically to this part of Egypt. Other maps will show it breaking off just below the Mount Carmel area along in here. So the Fertile Crescent from the top of the Persian Gulf all the way up below Damascus, and over near Mount Carmel and back. Now that's the most fertile land in that whole part of the world over there. So it's been a point that has been a point of contention or problem between people, because those people, they weren't organized very tightly socially. And they kind of took what they wanted as they went along. And that was the cause of a lot of friction between the different families over choice places for them to live. Now, in addition to that, we want to talk about some people back over here in this area and up in the part called Macedonia. And we have in history, coming in later, we find Alexander the Great coming from Macedonia and taking over the Greek army and defeating the Persian army, which was trying to make a push back in this direction, and wound up, and he became the source of a lot of the cultural advances that were made throughout the entire empire, which extended not just in this area, but Macedonia, across Asia Minor, down through here, all the way to Egypt, and on this side, all the way to the Indus River in India. Alexander had the idea that the Greek philosophy was the best philosophy in the world. And he wanted everybody that was conquered by him to take up the language, be able to speak and read the language, to have the same customs that they had, and to honor the same leaders that they had. But when Alexander died, his kingdom passed over to four of his generals. One of them was over basically the homeland. One of them was over this part of Egypt, and he was a Ptolemy. Had one who was over this part, and he was basically the Seleucids. And so the world was set up at the end of his tour when Alexander died. This is the group that basically gave the people of Palestine or Canaan or whatever you want to call it at this time, the Promised Land, they got a lot of problems from the Seleucids. And the other one was the Ptolemies in Egypt. And this served kind of as a buffer for all that was going on between those two powerhouses. The Seleucids and the Ptolemies, and they both wanted to control this land right in here. And that's what a lot of the conflicts were between Egypt and the Seleucids back up in here. The fourth general was just kind of in the area back in here, and nobody paid much attention to him. Next, the thing that we're going to be looking at is an empire which has its start back over here in Rome. And Rome's philosophy was to take over all of the things around the Mediterranean Sea. It's named Mediterranean because this part means the center of, And this part means sea, back over in here, center of the world, right here. And that's what they considered it. It was certainly the center of the Roman Empire, which covered just about everything here, several things across the top of the African continent. Any questions, comments? Yes, sir. We don't really know, Dave, because the land as we see it after the flood, we don't know how it even relates to the land before the flood. Because if you remember, after the flood, the ark landed on top, or not a top, but high up on a mountain. That we pretty well know where it was, and that would be the Ararat Mountains. Where it was launched from, we don't know. In fact, anything about the land before the flood is gone to us. We don't, for example, in the Garden of Eden, there were four rivers. Tigris was one of them. The Euphrates was one. And there were two others. We know two rivers that have the name Tigris and Euphrates. This may not even be the rivers that were in the Garden of Eden. But before the flood, the only memory that anybody has is what Noah and his three sons and their wives brought with them. Nothing else can we even come close to identifying what was there. In fact, if we look at what happened during the flood, the waters were pretty deep. 15 feet is pretty deep water, and that was over the highest mountain. But at the time when the flood was on the earth, we really don't know how high the mountains were. And most of the mountains and ridges and faults that we see probably occurred at the time when the earth was undergoing the perturbations of that flood. If we go back to Genesis 1, or Genesis 6, it starts, we find that the windows of heaven were opened and the springs of the deep were broken up, fountains of the deep were broken up, tends to indicate, and one other thing, the fact that in describing the condition of plant life before the flood, it never speaks of rain. It speaks of a mist rising from the ground to water the plants. I, of personal opinion, am convinced that it probably didn't rain on the earth until after the flood, until the flood started. So this would aggravate the situation for Noah as he was building the altar, because he's building an ark so that he and his family can escape the flood. But what flood? And what's going to bring about this flood? And when God made the statement that he would make a covenant, give Noah a sign that he would never destroy the earth by water again, he put a rainbow in the sky. Well, I would suspect that rainbows were formed back then like rainbows are formed today. You have a mist in the air, and the light waves that pass through that mist are broken down into a spectrum that goes all the way from blue as the real short wavelength stuff to infrared, which is the long wave stuff. And that happened after the flood was all over. Does that answer your question? Anybody else? Okay. Nor is pronounced. For example, the Ararat Mountains may not have been any more than just a little knoll in the surface of the earth. I don't know when it happened, but I'm suspicious that in breaking up the fountains of the deep, things like forming caverns or things like breaking up the crust of the earth into plates as we know them today, I think maybe at the flood, all of these things took place. Like the rift that we talk about. The rift that comes from right in here, all the way down through the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea, Gulf of Aqaba, down the Red Sea, and down to Mozambique in Africa. That is a separation point between two of those plates. And the motion of those plates will be lateral against each other in a rift like this one. Or if you go back to what took place up here in the mountains of Ararat, it may have been altogether different junction. So you're talking about a European plate in play up there. But you've got the African plate back in here. You've got the Arabian plate over here, and at this point along that rift, those plates join and rub against each other. And that's the source of the earthquakes and things that we read about in the Bible. It's when these plates shift, it disturbs a lot of things. The fountains of the deep were in the earth. There was a separation of the ground and the waters, but it apparently were very gentle separations. And when the flood came, the things that I visualize happening in the case of the earth, the surface breaks up in the plates that are free to move. And over years, we've seen them move. Beneath the earth, apparently, God had stored massive depots of water. And when those broke up and the surface of the earth changed the way it did, and when the waters from heaven came down, we've got water enough to cover the earth for 15 feet above the highest obstacle out there. But I really do not think that there's justification for saying that the mountains that we see now were actually mountains of any structure at all before the flood. Anything else? Yeah, it's right there. And that's basically the land north of Hazor, which is on up in Lebanon, which is today. And the children of Israel are in the promised land, which comes all the way down to here and back up. Okay, anything else? I didn't mean to make it a physics lesson tonight. Pardon me. I've pointed out Mesopotamia to you. Let me go back to it again. If you notice, Mesopotamia is the land between the rivers. You have the Tigris on one side, Euphrates on the other, and it goes all the way down to the top of the Persian Gulf. The Sumerians settled in this area here, and Nimrod, it is reported, built the Babel, which became the location for Babylon. The Assyrian nation was centered at Nineveh, but Mesopotamia as a unit has never been a kingdom. Kingdoms have risen there, and kingdoms have been torn down there. But Mesopotamia, per se, has never been an individual kingdom by itself. Am I through? Believe so. Thank you.